From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Well, our connection this hour will be made in June of 2026 when the Buffalo Bills plan to open their new stadium. Packed taxpayers will have contributed at least $850 million to the project, which has already ballooned in cost. The Bills are doing this really at the best possible time, maybe not in regards to inflation, but more in regards to the public embrace of paying for a billionaire owner's stadium. The Bills are more popular than they've ever been. They're winning more games than any other franchise on an annual basis. They're on national television all the time. Their quarterback is a human bumper car combined with a golden slingshot. They're a hot property. And it's wild to think they haven't even made a Super Bowl yet in the Josh Allen era. 3 days ago, an ESPN headline declared that this is the best chance the Bills have ever had to win a Super Bowl. Of the six largest betting sites, the Bills are the AFC favorite to go to the Super Bowl on three. The Kansas City Chiefs are the favorite on the other three, but we all know by now that the Chiefs are fraudulent, all of which means we could be just weeks away from a massive event in this region, one that could ripple in various ways. Syracuse.com claims that 25% of Bills fans would give up Christmas for a Bills Super Bowl, and I wonder if it's even higher than that. 14% of Bills fans would pass on going to a family member's wedding for a Bills Super Bowl, and I am certain the real number is higher than that. Come on. How could we measure the economic impact? Who benefits the most? Is there a way to know what kind of economic effect a Super Bowl would mean to Western New York? This hour, a conversation about the biggest sporting event in Western New York history that is going to happen in less than 2 months. My guests include in studio Chuck Wade, Senior Vice President of Brighton Securities and a former sports journalist. Also a certified Bills fan, yes?
Absolutely.
Hey, welcome back here.
Good to be back.
Mona Segetola-Slamy is a music director, host, producer for Classical 91.5, WXXI Classical, and a still somewhat recently converted Bills fanatic, yes?
Yes, it's good to be here, Evan Dawson Knox.
You've been waiting all year to say that, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
Yes, you have. Now that you've done that, when did you become a Bills fan?
Well, our vice president of radio, Gene Fisher, used to have two season tickets and would bring a different person every time. I'd never been to a football game, and it was a lot of fun. Both the game, dinner in the parking lot beforehand, and all of that. But also, it was still just a thing that happened in front of me, and I enjoyed then but didn't think of the rest of the time. Past few years, though, I've been enjoying talking about it with friends, connecting with family over it, and so now, go Bills.
Mona Segetola-Slamy becoming a Bills fan. A polymath who works among us here was not a sports fan. Her becoming a Bills fan, I think of it like Peter Parker getting bit by the radioactive spider. I mean, like, this is an extraordinary transformation. And so we're going to have fun with Mona this hour. Let me welcome as well Eric Morris, who is staff economist for Alesco Advisors, who's on the phone with us. Hey, welcome back to the program, Eric.
Go Bills, Evan.
Go Bills, although Eric astutely pointed out this morning, if you give up 44, you're not going to be going probably anywhere. Although they almost won, yeah. Eric, so, you know.
I woke up feeling a little bitter aftertaste after yesterday's loss. We need to see the defense producing a little bit more. 44 points giving up is that's tough.
Let's see what happens when they play Detroit next week. Hey, we got a long way to go before a Super Bowl. It's going to happen. And I just want to ask Mona to briefly explain to listeners. I love this. What do you call the running back, the person who runs into other people and falls
down?
Well,
that was also when I first started seeing Bills game. We all the time, I just seemed to think that we were going to score by running straight into the other team and not getting anywhere. Now I understand it's like, you know, a long con where you're running into them sometimes so they don't expect it when you throw the football.
You're not wrong.
It's so right.
You're not wrong. It's a very literal interpretation of it, but it's not incorrect.
It's so good. It's so good. Do you have a favorite, Bill?
I like our old cat, young cat pair, Amari Cooper and Keon Coleman.
Old cat.
You know, when you have an older cat and you get a younger cat to like keep them and then the older cat teaches the younger cat things? Yeah.
I haven't thought about that, but Amari Cooper is kind of the old cat in that relationship. Okay, I like that. And are you as confident as I am that this is a Super Bowl season, Mona?
I'm hoping. My sister is an Eagles fan. She, you know, has a lot of other feelings, and she knows a lot more than I do. I have to learn enough just to be able to talk about it with her, but not so much that I don't absolutely drive her crazy when we talk about it.
Well, when you think about your beloved Josh Allen, would you like him to not run into people a little bit more? I mean, he took a shot on the sideline, and even Tom Brady yesterday was saying, listen, you're going to get hit if you if you're dancing on the edge there, and you got to find a way to protect yourself, aren't you worried about him?
That is actually a couple of games ago where I realized what I like. You know, who you like as a sports team is kind of a maybe a coincidence of where you are or who you know. But the lesson that that the Bills like, that it used to be that Josh did everything himself, though it seems he's trying to again. But then he throws to everyone that, you know, that everybody eats philosophy, that young people get trusted, and that you have this team effort, to the sense that you can trust other people, but then you can also go to the mat when you need to. That last score, was it two games ago, where, you know, he took the big hit right at the end to score? That seems like a really nice metaphor for a lot of things. So.
That's amazing. We should be doing this once a week with Mo. Come on. What have we been waiting for?
No, talk to people who really know what they're talking about.
No, I love it. I mean, you clearly do. That's the fun. That's the beauty of this. Chuck Wade, I do want to spend a little bit of time trying to actually suss out what we could be about to see on the impact here. And I don't know. Do we obsess too much about money and economic impact? Or is this a case where if this team goes to a Super Bowl, and with this particular team, it's a windfall for the region?
Yeah, I just want to say, first of all, I hope we're not jinxing anything as a
Bills
fan.
That's not a thing.
No,
that's not a thing.
Well, I'm just getting it out there.
Thank you.
You know, so typically most economic impact studies of a sporting event have to deal with when an area is hosting an event. We had the PGA Championship here a couple of years ago, and that would be calculated. You'd look at the number of hotel rooms in an area, the average hotel room cost per night, and you can multiply that out and get an idea. In this case, the game is not here. The Super Bowl would not be
right
in Buffalo. So you have to look a little differently. But I think if you look at the amount of time that has passed since the Bills were in a Super Bowl and the amount of love for the team in this area, I would imagine a scenario where schools are closed the following day because I know kids are going to be up watching the game. I would imagine so you have to look at food and beverage, pizza places, any kind of restaurant is probably that does takeout is probably going to see a huge boon in business. Merchandise. If there's logoed gear that people are buying throughout the
everybody
playoffs.
Everybody already has it. It's all, everybody's got it. It's, we've got WXXI Bills microphones.
Everyone has it, but if it's something branded with a Super Bowl logo, that's something people don't have.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a different thing. And if they win, it's even different. I think where the biggest impact to the area in your traditional economic impact would be is if they were to win and there was a parade, which there obviously would be, in downtown Buffalo, where then you do have people coming to the area. You would likely have Bills fans from out of town, of which there's a significant population spread throughout the country, that would probably want to come to Western New York and to Buffalo and want to spend some time there to be downtown for the parade, which, I mean, we can imagine would be a spectacle unlike anything that's been seen in this area.
It's going to happen, and I don't believe in the jinx stuff. Sorry, Bills fans, but I'm here to tell you, I've seen the future. They're going to the Super Bowl. They are defeating the Chiefs, and they're going to beat them by 3 touchdowns in the playoffs. It is not really going to be particularly interesting. It's going to be a coronation, and Josh Allen is the MVP. Now, Eric Morris, as the staff economist for Alesco Advisors, what would you want to add to how we actually talk about economic impact here?
Yeah, maybe I'll offer the dismal scientist take on this. and first, let me start by saying a Bills Super Bowl appearance and an inevitable victory after that would be huge. The impact would be absolutely massive on the area. In terms of economic impact, it's a different discussion. Chuck pointed out the fact that when we have these conversations about economic impact, we're typically talking about the host cities. And he mentioned for good reasons, because it generates tourist dollars. And I want to frame the conversation a little bit. When we talk about economic impact, this is work I used to do all the time when I was working with the Center for Governmental Research. We would do economic impact studies. When we talk about economic impact, we have to kind of start from your base case of saying, what does your typical economy look like? And when I say economy, we have to quantify that. We're talking about dollars. We're talking about dollars being spent. So what does that look like? What's your base case? Because but for the Super Bowl, you would have this already existing amount of economic activity. Then you say, because of the Super Bowl, what's the extra impact? Well, you know, Chuck mentioned schools being closed, people being out, going out to dinner or getting pizza, partying, things like that. We have to ask ourselves, is that spending that would have happened anyway? Mm-hmm. At a different time, in a different way, maybe it wouldn't have been on pizza at another time, but it would have been on something else. And I think what we'd really see is a big rearrangement, both by sector and sort of like intertemporally by timeline, of spending to be concentrated on that day. It's a bit of a zero-sum game when you're not bringing in external money, which the parade point is a good point by Chuck. If you have a parade, you could see tourism dollars coming from elsewhere. You have Bills fans who might have moved away from the area or who just live in other places who want to come to Buffalo to rally around that. They're bringing dollars in from other places. But when it comes to an impact of just simply the Bills being at the Super Bowl on TV, Buffalo fans watching them, I don't see a major economic impact, a boon to the area. Impact, cultural impact, a spiritual impact for sure, but economic impact, not so much.
You got to be amazing at parties.
What if you're a folding table salesperson, the person who sells the tables you jump through?
The other note I had was table sales.
Yes.
That, table sales from hardware stores would likely see a bump from people having parties.
That's a proven fact that the collapsible tables sales would go through the roof.
Are those just normal collapsible tables? Because, I mean, have you ever jumped through a table, Mona?
Not yet.
Are you going to?
If we win, sure. Little Cafe or Stage of Hochstein?
The Little Cafe, Mona. Or yeah, at Hochstein. Mona Segatola saw me jumping through a table at Hochstein. That is a promise. Now, okay. So as much as Eric's a little bit of a wet blanket, I want to ask a couple of other things here. I was reading about what Paul Solman, who's worked for PBS for many years, and he's been a correspondent for the PBS NewsHour since 1985. He's covered business and economics. He taught online classes about 10 years ago, and he gathered data to try to make the following case. Was LeBron James's return to Cleveland in 2014 an economic boon? And he argued that the return of LeBron James to Cleveland brought in $100 million each year to the workers and local businesses surrounding the Cleveland Cavaliers. I mean, I remember my dad in downtown Cleveland saying, like, this is going to be a $250 million impact. And I'm like, no, come on. But maybe so. I don't know. I'd have to give all of you guys the details on that analysis. But, Eric, could you be swayed by evidence that sports maybe does have an outsized economic presence, that maybe we shouldn't be so cynical?
Yeah, absolutely. I can actually speak from personal experience on this. I'm a proud Syracuse University alumnus, and the timeline of my attending Syracuse was shortly after they won the national championship in 2003. And what was really interesting was, winning the national championship was great, but, you could see economic impact from that, maybe yes, maybe no. But what you saw was a huge notoriety for the school. And actually, so much so that my application class is one of the first after the national championship. They had this huge influx of applications. A much larger percentage of students who were accepted decided to come to the school. There actually wound up being a housing shortage for students my freshman year. And I wound up living in a remodeled dining hall that they had to do over the summer because of the number of students that accepted. So what was interesting was that on the surface, maybe there wasn't so much of an impact, like I was saying, but you had this notoriety come up. People wanted to come to Syracuse. They wanted to go to school there. And maybe that could be the case for Buffalo. People might want to live in Buffalo because it'll put its, plant its flag as a Super Bowl champion sports town.
Well, and, Chuck Wade, who has been a sports journalist, you covered the Bills during the lean years, right?
Yeah, they're terrible.
Terrible.
People, they were terrible.
It's hard to remember at this point.
Yeah, it's 2008, 2009, 10. They were terrible. And the thing is that the Bills were not, they just weren't relevant. And they become relevant now. And I think, there's an area that I would look at where there could be some real potential benefit. And I look at merchandise if the Bills win a Super Bowl. And the distinction between like NFL licensed merchandise, that's not really going to have any impact on the local economy because a lot of that money would be split between the Bills and the NFL because of the licensing. But I think of the Etsy culture that has popped up in that, I like to go to Quigley's Cafe in Penfield. That's around the corner from where we live. And they have tons of stuff that are made by local merchants. There's always Bills sweatshirts and things like that, and they're very clever. So I would think like that, if I was somebody who made products like that, the amount of merchandising that can happen for an event that's never happened that people have such a connection to. And I think of myself, when the Bills made the four Super Bowls, I was very young. I was, I think, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old. So that's ingrained in us. And now my generation is the generation that may have some disposable income they'd be willing to spend on that because there's this connection. So that's what would kind of fascinate me is the opportunity for merchandising, commemorative gifts and items and things like that that people would want because it commemorates a once-in-a-lifetime happening, well, at least once in a Bills fan lifetime up to this point. And from the aspect of local merchants, local entrepreneurs looking to do something like that, that's where I could see an outsized impact that may not be there right now.
You agree, Mona?
Yeah, it's just thinking of the things that I have. I think it's called 26 T-shirts or something. There's somebody who makes some Bills merch that are limited things. They also support charities. I have a Metallica Master of Puppets Masters of Process shirt, and I have a Jaws Josh beach towel. So they're both creative. It's local, but it also had, you know, probably the thing that tipped me over the edge was also supporting a cause. But you also made such a good point about awareness of it. I don't know. I grew up in New Jersey. The Giants played there. I guess that was the default team, but we didn't really watch a lot of sports. You know, I watched the Super Bowl because it was a big event, but something about being here and like being, you know, the way people talk about the Bills, the way you connect, the way that so in orchestra rehearsal, someone leans over from the cello section to say that they've scored when there's a Monday night game when we're in rehearsal.
That happens in orchestra?
Yes, definitely. And the way the orchestras actually in Buffalo, the Philharmonic, or when some teams are playing, each of their city's orchestras will sort of have a little rivalry. So that's, it's not the economic
impact.
Can
you not schedule orchestra practice when they're playing, Mona? Isn't that a thing?
I had to miss the first 10 minutes of the game because at the end of our Christmas concert, I was talking with the bass section about, are we going to be done by 4:25? And so I said, what happens then?
I think you have to keep in mind, we call it goodwill, which is something that's hard to measure in terms of dollars. But it's the emotional connection or the things that happen because something's happened and people being in a better mood. People bonding, people having parties to celebrate this. Those are the things that are tough to quantify from a dollars point of view. But it's something that is very real. And does that grow the Bills fan base? The other thing that I thought of is, well, would that encourage more people to be purchasing season tickets? It's become more expensive now with the new stadium and the personal seat licenses that people have to pony up, which can be five-digit sums. If a Super Bowl would help the Bills to move more PSLs, sell more season tickets to the new stadium.
Well, this is something I wanted to ask all of you about, because I already have a couple of notes from listeners. In fact, well, I'll get to those notes in a second from listeners. But on the subject of this stadium, Chuck, let me start with you on this. When I think about what's going on in Cleveland, where I'm from, there's been this debate about a new stadium, because, of course, they always want a new stadium. Do they put it on the lakefront? Do they put it downtown? Or do they go in Brook Park, which is like Orchard Park? It's like, you know, it's outside of downtown. Yep. It's a suburb. It's not connected to the heart of the city. But you've got more room to build a dome if you want. You got more room to do whatever you want. And looks like the Browns want to go to Brook Park. They don't want to be in downtown. That's upset the mayor of Cleveland. That's upset the residents of the city of Cleveland. It's upset me, I guess. Nobody listens to me. But it's also not a popular time, Chuck, because the Browns are really viewed with some scorn right now. They mortgaged the soul of the franchise to bring in a quarterback that was a moonshot. And it turns out that he has a record as a pretty well adjudicated sexual abuser, mm-hmm. and he also turns out to be terrible at football now. Yeah. And so everyone is angry. It's not a good time to ask taxpayers for $1 billion. The Bills, on the other hand, are getting $850 million as long as costs don't balloon more from the taxpayers. But people love the Bills. It's the perfect time. You really couldn't have orchestrated it better, could you?
No, it would have been hard to do it that way. And unfortunately, what it came down to is there's a lot of pressure from the NFL that there needs to be more revenue coming from the stadium. And that's something that the 32 owners make a rule. And the Bills were in a tough spot. I understand it's a lot of taxpayer money. It is a lot of money. But the alternative, which I don't know if it would have come to fruition or not, is that little carrot that's always dangling out there that if we don't get a new stadium, the Bills could go somewhere else. Yeah. And I mean, for good or not, that was leveraged. And, you know, I'd ask the question, well, there's a lot of things we pay taxes for that I don't think make a ton of sense. I do like having the Bills in Buffalo, and I do want them to stay there. And I understand the need for a new stadium, for new infrastructure. there, and there's never going to be a perfect way to do it.
So listeners know we've asked lawmakers, almost everybody in state government has defended the state money that's going to the bills, hundreds of millions of dollars, for the reason Chuck just said. And that's fine. I mean, I also understand, again, I'll read your emails in a second on this subject. And maybe listeners, maybe your views have changed over time on the state. Maybe you're happy to support it with your tax dollars, or maybe you feel the other way. Send us a note if you'd like, connections@wxxi.org. But I want to ask Eric two points on the stadium. The first is something that we've talked about, which is a concept of sticky costs. So when there is inflation, we see prices go up, but prices sometimes come down when inflation lessens, and sometimes prices do not. And as Eric, among others, have helped educate us on this program, there are sticky sectors of the economy. I want to know if PSLs are sticky. Here's why. I want to know if a personal seat license, which for the Buffalo Bills' new stadium is a lot of money. Chuck said five figures in a lot of cases. Pretty like mid five figures, for goodness sake, for some seats. If they go back to the Doug Flutie-era Bills, how sticky are those prices going to be, and is the goodwill, Eric Morris, going to change?
Yeah, so you got to think about alternatives, right? So do people have alternatives for this? If you have an alternative for something, if there's something that's a reasonable alternative that you could get what you were looking for out of it, then you can substitute that alternative in and pay a lower cost for it. When it comes to the Bills, for rabid Bills fans, which many Western New Yorkers are, there really is no alternative. This is it. This is how you get your primary form of entertainment. So in terms of desire and willingness, people are probably really excited about getting those PSLs. But in terms of ability, that's the other thing. So it's less to me like a team takes a downturn and you don't see that. It's more like the economy takes a downturn or the region loses a bunch of jobs. You know, people lose the ability to be able to fund those large expenses. I think that's where you might be able to see some fall off there. But the Bills are a hot commodity, and there is no substitute. Nobody circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills. So in terms of people's demand for this, there's really no foreseeable, say they miss the Super Bowl, heaven forbid, God forbid. I don't want to put that out there because we're already manifesting the Super Bowl win. But I don't see an event like that, a catastrophic event like that, leading to the bottom falling out on these PSLs.
Okay. And then the other question for you on this is, Joel writes in to say, Evan, stadiums never pay off because the main professional leagues and the teams are so heavily subsidized. As David K. Johnston wrote in his book Free Lunch, the taxpayers, or in this case, the Seneca, will always be on the hook. So Joel is making the case that when New York State, when Erie County, when the Pagulas say, yeah, we need your money, your taxpayer money for the stadium, but the economic impact will ripple out and it will pay for itself. Joel is saying baloney. They never pay for themselves. And we should know that in advance. How do you view that question, Eric, on whether these things can cover their own cost?
In a cool, cold, hard, rational analysis, economic analysis, these types of taxpayer subsidies for stadiums are almost impossible to justify based on pure dollars and jobs number. But that's not why we do this, right? I mean, this isn't all about pure dollars and jobs. We've heard from Chuck, we've heard from Mona that this is a very emotional thing for the region. And so you can't put a price, you can't put a dollar price on that type of civic pride. And I'm not saying that I'm not endorsing or being against using taxpayer funds for the stadium in this sense. But I think that efforts to try to rationalize this when we're talking about professional sports, you're not going to really convince many people with cold, hard analysis. I'm the wet blanket. I'm going to not be the wet blanket here and say it's really about the emotion, about the romance of sports, about civic pride and having something every Sunday that you kind of attach yourself to in your city. So, I'm not sure you're ever going to win the argument on cold, hard, rational analysis. But on the flip side, you always win the argument with that type of emotion and attachment.
Yeah, I just want people to be up front. That's all I'm saying with that. Mona?
Well, yeah, there's I go two ways, two minds of this. One, which is I know the same thing from the arts. It doesn't matter if the cost, if, you know, some of the, there are economic benefits to the arts, but that's not why we do that. It's not why I go to see a play because I'm having an economic impact. That's not why I play
like,
the
today
viola.
Today I'm going to go have an economic impact.
Yeah,
on
I mean,
city.
It's a wonderful thing and it's part of it, but that's not the central reason you do it. It's an added thing. And of course, I think a bit more investment in the arts will go a long way. The other side is football is this popular, populist thing, but there are no seats at the Metropolitan Opera, let alone the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra, that cost five figures. So it's so fascinating to see. In a way, I was surprised to learn how expensive this was when the arts, which are seen as a fancy, too rich for me kind of thing sometimes, some people talk about them that way, especially in classical music, is it is definitely cheaper than going to the Bills.
To the Bills. Is that okay with you?
I don't know. It's complicated, I guess, right? It's just.
I mean, how do you feel about the stadium and the taxpayer expenditure?
Just, again, the culture thing sort of. I understand investing in culture beyond the economic impact. So I don't know if I want to say yes and, because if it isn't a zero-sum game, then we have money that we should invest in things that make our quality of life better. That's, I guess.
Yeah, Chuck?
Emotions and rational thinking are inverse. They are. I mean, think about it. When you're emotional, do you make good rational choices? Not often.
I do amazingly.
And when you're making your best rational decisions,
no.
It's often when you're devoid of emotion being involved.
Yeah.
And that's the thing here. And, and Eric put it really well. Imagine Sundays without the Bills. What that would be like in Western New York. It is a part of people's lives and has been for lifetimes.
I just want to push on that a little bit. That is the argument that has worked. That's the reason the stadium's coming.
Yeah.
Roger Goodell was making this argument 10 years ago when, if listeners remember, in 2014, the rumor was that Donald Trump might buy the Bills or that Donald Trump might run for New York governor. But then it turned out he didn't want to do those things because, he figured he didn't have a chance. And he ran for president just to bolster his businesses, knowing he would never win. It's a different world we're in now. It's amazing what's happened in 10 years. But it was a different world 10 years ago. Roger Goodell was saying exactly this to a fan base that was losing all the time. And my only concern with the point you're making, Chuck, is that is true. Mm-hmm. But there has to be a limit somewhere. Because when a billionaire owner says, "Can you imagine Sundays without us? What are you going to give me?" At some point, the answer has to be, we will give you a lot, but we cannot give you everything. And I'm not saying this stadium is everything. I'm not saying it was a bad bet. I'm not saying it's a bad decision. What I am saying is that as a journalist, I do want to see whether it's Pegula, Governor Hochul, others, stop making the claim that, well, don't worry, this will all just pay for itself, because that's not the reality. It's a choice that we should all participate in, knowing the facts. Is that fair, Chuck?
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely fair. And I'd ask you to show me a politician that participates in reality and honesty. I mean, that is. And they understand that, and they have leveraged that smartly to get a new stadium that's primarily taxpayer-funded versus league or owner-funded. I understand it, but that is unfortunately the way it is, especially in a market like this, where this is it. There is no other pro team of this level.
Yeah, that's right. All right, so let me just rip off a couple of emails, and then I'm going to let Eric go and bring in one of his colleagues, because Eric is generous with his time on this Monday here. David says, "I enjoy the Bills, and I would have been happy to help pay for it if it had been covered at the stadium. Would have had off-season uses and protected the interior for longer." So he wanted a roof. They're not getting a roof because they still want those snow games that end up for great television. I got to say that. Juan is asking, when the government funds a stadium for a team, are they giving the team that new stadium, or does the town and state retain ownership? Chuck, what do you know about that?
Well, technically, the county owns the county, stadium.
Erie County owns
the stadium.
Yeah.
And I believe the Bills lease it for use from Erie County.
That sounds correct to me. And I think it would be a different deal if the Pegulas literally owned the stadium itself. That would be obscene, I think.
Okay. And the other uses is great. I think about the baseball park here that you can see Dark Star Orchestra. There's the kids events that we are part of. You know, it's sort of a thing that does a lot of different things.
Yeah, absolutely. So a couple of good points there. Joe says the Bills are a very popular team around the country and even the world. At times it seems like the world is praying for the Bills to win the Super Bowl. How about just one before I die? Hey, Joe, I'm with you. I think you're going to get more than one in the next 3 years. That's what I think. I know everybody's like, stop saying, guys, it doesn't work like this. I can't control what happens on the field. I can't. They're winning the Super Bowl. It's ordained. Charlie says, Evan, I lived in San Diego for 10 years. Believe it or not, the Chargers fans were as passionate as the Bills fans. They were not a bunch of margarita-sipping, quiche-eating burnouts. They loved that team. But a few years ago, they did say a firm no to a new taxpayer stadium, and I agreed. That's from Charlie. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to compare fan bases. There's a lot of passion out there. What I will definitely say is, if you look at where the Bills played yesterday, they played in a beautiful stadium that had roughly 40% Bills fans, and it feels ridiculous that there are two LA teams there that barely have their own fan bases. But that's a lot of money. That's a, what is that, a $2 billion stadium out there?
Yeah.
Check, something like that?
Yeah.
So, Charlie, I appreciate that. It's connections at WXXI.org, listeners. Todd says, the problem is that there are 10,000 fewer seats for the regular people and lots of boxes for the rich people in the new stadium. You're nodding over there, Chuck Wade.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I mean, that's where the money in stadiums really comes from, is you
the suites.
When you've got corporations buying suites, they're equivalent of many, many tickets on an individual level.
Yeah, I mean, Mona, you want to view this as kind of this community. I mean, you're part of, we'll talk about this in our second half hour here, but you're certainly part of a community of people who love this team. How does that community feel get injured if the priority looks like it's for the elite and, you know, not the common fan?
And I think so much about this in the arts, and it's so weird then to be like, but the Bills, I didn't have to think about it, and here I am putting myself into like,
oh, no.
Oh. Logic. But I will say, what will we do on Sunday if not the Bills? I will recommend to anyone who hasn't seen. It's from a few years ago. Comedian Joe Pera has a great thing. Speaking of economic impact, he says, if the Bills start losing, Dad says, why don't we go to the pumpkin patch? Maybe we can go to the corn maze. The Bills, the argument he made comedically, is that they win until they lose to bring families together. So
I love it. Eric Morris, final word from you before we let you go, sir.
Thank you so much for having me. Great talking with the three of you. Go Bills.
Go Bills. Eric Morris is staff economist for Alesco Advisors. Thank you, Eric.
Thanks, Evan. Talk to you soon.
Always great talking to him. We've got Chuck Wade in studio, senior vice president of Brighton Securities. He was a former colleague of mine when he was in sports journalism back in the day. Boy, back in the day, indeed.
It was a long time
ago. It was now. Mona Sekatolaslami, music director, host, producer for WXXI Classical 91.5, and one of the best Bills fans I know. We're going to come right back after this only break of the hour on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, we're joined by Mary Rosenberger, the author of the new memoir, Freedom Village. Her memoir is all about her time growing up in this institution on the shore of Seneca Lake. It was essentially, well, the experts say, a religious cult. And Mary didn't know it until she broke away at age 24. It's a story I had never heard of, and you're going to want to hear it next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Mona Sekatolaslami, I just had a thought here. So my colleague from Classical 91.5 maybe didn't expect to find herself a true Bills fanatic, but she is now. She calls me, what do you call me?
Evan Dawson Knox.
Evan Dawson Knox. That's
every time he catches a football, I shout, there goes,
there goes Evan Dawson Knox. But Mona, here's the thought that I just had. Mona pointed out in our first half hour that there is this stereotype that the arts writ large, you know, opera, you know, the RPO, it's fancier, it's out of reach, it's more elite, it's more expensive. And sports, going to a Bills game, is where, you know, it's the proletariat, it's fun. And Mona says she becomes a Bills fan and finds out, oh my gosh, it's more expensive to go to the Bills than it is the RPO. So what I think needs to happen is we need table jumping at the RPO. What do you think?
Well, this is years ago. You proposed after I came back from one of my first football games that we would do keg stands in Betty's Cafe. So no, there's, I think it's just, I don't know. It's a lot of things, but I guess it came up also because you're talking about those fancy licenses paying more than all these other seats. In the arts, which is a nonprofit, not like the NFL is a nonprofit, that's a thing we could get into, but is that, of course, certain, like, you know, supporters pay so that we try and keep ticket prices down, because there is this commitment that this should be accessible. There's this sense that this thrives when people are part of it. Now, of course, I think football also has, sure, some of us may not go to a game, but we'll watch it on TV, we'll go to a bar and watch it. So there's no sense of, like, I need to keep tickets cheap for the children or something right. in sports. But sports is also about community and culture, and I know you've talked about that in youth sports and all of that. We have a lot of same things in music and the arts. I feel a lot of things are parallel while it's all still clearly different.
Yeah, let's just close that circle with table jumping. Who knows? Hey, I want to bring in another one of our former colleagues. We're bringing the 13 Wham band back together. Doug Emblidge is with us. And Doug, of course, a long time at 13 Wham and now also over at Alesco Advisors and doing great there. A Bills fan, not originally a Bills fan, though, Doug, right?
No, and that leads me to my first point. You, as a lifelong Cleveland Browns fan, saying, declaring that the Bills will win the Super Bowl and then declaring it's not a jinx. You are a Browns fan, young man.
I know how this works. I do. But, like, I don't have the same. I want the Bills to win a Super Bowl almost as much as I want a Cleveland team to win it. But it's not quite as much, so I don't have it. Yeah.
I grew up a Browns fan. A lot of people my age, I'm 60, what am I, 63? A lot of us did because Jimmy Brown played at Syracuse. The Browns and the Giants were the only two teams on TV for a lot of the time. The Bills were in the AFL, not the NFL. So anyway, but I became a Bills fan when I did sports at Channel 13. Early in my career, I'd started news. I went to they asked me to do sports, and I thought it was going to be where I stayed, and I ended up there for 3 years and then came back to news. But my first day, as I recall, was in 1986, the day that Jim Kelly got off the plane from Houston, where he'd gone to play in the USFL, to sign with the Bills. And so I got to cover him for 3 years as they, you know, the beginning of the evolution, right? You could see that they were going somewhere. And I left sports in 89, went back to news. So I wasn't there to cover the Super Bowls, although I did get to go to one of them. But I just realized one day I was watching a Bills-Browns game. And I thought, oh my gosh, I'm rooting for the Bills. And it was like a painful moment for me in a way, because I just always been a Browns fan since I was a child. But it was hard not to love them then. And I think it's the same thing now. It's just hard not to love the Bills.
So part of what I wanted to ask you to share with us a little bit, Doug, is, sort of that amorphous question of what it would mean. But part of the answer maybe is in why we care to begin with. So I want to read an email from Greg, who writes to say, Evan, here's my advice. Leave sports behind. You'll be happier. Read a book. Go outside. And what I would say to Greg is, I read books, Greg. I go outside a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think it's either. Mona, do you feel like it's either or?
Your Not
sports
at all.
Fandom? Yeah, you still read books.
Still read
as
books.
As it turns out.
Though it was nice when I wasn't going out as much when my husband was sick recently to know Sunday was when the game was on. There was this thing, yeah. Even if I wasn't living my normal, you know, to the concert, to the symphony, to this kind of life. But yes, I still do other things.
Yes, that's so I appreciate that, Greg. I don't know, Chuck, is that too cynical to go outside, read a book?
No, because I love to do those things too. But for so many people, sports and the Bills is an emotional connection to the past. And that's what I think is makes it so strong, is that I can think back and remember back to I was a Washington Redskins fan as a kid. My dad and I were. Mm-hmm. And we loved watching them together. We would go out to hotels in Batavia to find the game on the NFL Sunday Ticket. When I moved away, my first TV job, the Bills were a connection to back home. And the Bills were a connection to something that I missed. And that's what sports is. That's why this would mean so much, because you have millions of people in New York that grew up Bills fans, and they remember doing it with their families and with their dads and then going out and playing football in the yard. And this has never happened, and it came so close four times in a row that there's just this emotional connection that I think is what makes it so strong for so many of us.
Yeah. Doug, have there been times in the leaner years where you said, you know what, I don't know if this is worth it, or have you always found yourself saying, look, this is a community and we stick it out even when it's awful?
In those lean times, I went outside and read a book about when the Bills were good. I mean, the harshest of critics in terms of our love affair with sports would say, you know, we tend to root for laundry. All you're doing is rooting for
Jerry
laundry.
Jerry Seinfeld's line,
the people inside it change everything. But that's not true. So to me, the Bills connection is hours spent with my dad, at Bills games with my son, at Bills games with my daughters. Now they watch every week with my sons-in-laws. My wife is in, and you know, to say it's just laundry, no, because look who shows up and opens the games at Bills home games. It's legends from the 60s or 70s or 80s and beyond. So it does. It does. I'm thinking of that James Earl Jones speech in Field of Dreams, right, about how baseball marked the time. Well, you know, any sport that you're into can do that. And does that connection to the past, is it, you know, emotion-based? Of course it is. Is it kind of almost silly? Yep. But it's a great silly. And it is a quality of life thing. It's just, and you're right, that Bills during the football season, I mark my schedule around what's going to, you know, when the Bills are going to be on. And I think that's a beautiful thing, because a lot of the time I'm not sitting there watching alone. I'm in a community of whether it's family or out or at a game. I went to the Miami game this year. I think it's, and we talk a lot about the economic impact, and I heard Eric talking about it. I heard Chuck talking about it. And I understand that. But to me, the bigger thing is not any economic impact, because it's going to be very temporary. But look at the impact on Buffalo and Western New York's reputation around the country, just of having this alien, as Sean McVay called him last night, playing quarterback, and people getting to know Buffalo through him and through the team. I think it's all good. I mean, I get the PSL thing. That's a concern. But you can watch the games on TV and have a wonderful experience, and I think it's just, for the most part, a good thing.
Well, here's an interesting email. Kate says, Evan, you've had shows about why people aren't going to church anymore, or why people aren't going to houses of worship anymore. Turns out they're all at the Bills game. That's from Kate. And she closes with saying, I'm not sure that's a good thing. Okay. So what I would say to that, Kate, is they're not all at the Bills game. That's not possible. And we have had shows about declining church attendance, declining, that's tied to a larger trend, which is that the more, especially post-pandemic, but the more technology is part of our lives, the less we are part of communities that we used to be part of. So that could be neighborhood associations, people who do block parties, could be church, could be your temple, could be your mosque, could be all kinds of, could be coaching, could be all kinds of things. We are less connected to things that feel like community. And so to Kate, she's looking at it going, well, they're obviously all at the Bills game. But Chuck Wade, that is a form of community, right?
It absolutely. I mean, go to Wegmans on a Sunday at 8 a.m. People, I mean, it is. And it's one of those things that, I mean, in a lot of ways, there's a lot of division right now in our country. Bills fans don't care about each other's politics on Sunday. You just don't care. You're all rooting for the same thing. And the Bills, to me, is, it's hope every year. It's the hope that they'll get there. It's the hope that something will happen and that you get to share it with those around you. And the fact that it's, that you're all rooting for the Bills is the only thing that matters in that case. And I think that's what makes it so special.
Now, it's interesting you bring up that division. I mean, I don't do a lot on social media anymore because I find it very antisocial, although I'm going to try to find the good in stuff. That's my goal for 2025. Don't spend a ton of time on social, but find the good, flush out the bad. And one of the few things I have really kind of talked to people about on social, Chuck, in the last year is when I'm coaching sports, even if it's the Little League, people don't ask about your politics.
No.
Like, do you love our kids and do you care? Are you working towards the same thing? Well, fans show up. You're next to somebody with a PSL or not a PSL. Maybe they spent the rest of their free cash for the week to buy a seat. You don't care how they voted. That's not the conversation. No. And there's something actually pretty healthy about that.
Yeah, all the time. I mean, so when you travel out of town and you see some with a Bills hat or shirt, it's just an automatic thing. You yell, "Go Bills," to each other. And if you're close enough, you high five or fist bump and you keep going. You don't need to know anything else about the person other than, hey, we share this with each other. Go Bills.
Mona, do you want to know how people voted around you in the stadium?
No, and I also would say we're talking about getting along with fellow Bills fans. I'd say that getting into football has brought me closer to my sister, and she's an Eagles fan. And but when there's a game on, I will text and make some comments about why is this happening, and she'll explain the exact detailed rule, and I will, again, make some absolute silly comment that makes her roll her eyes. So to me, it has become a thing where, again, I don't remember growing up with anyone in our household being a football fan, and then suddenly I realized my dad's a Giants fan, my brother and sister are Eagles fans, and I've sort of morphed into this Bills fan over the past few years here.
Yeah. Doug I do think, as much as Kate might be snarking about all the people who used to go to church or at Highmark Stadium, I do think that there's an important conversation about how there's a human, very human tendency or need for community. I'm not saying it's perfectly filled by sports fandom, but that's, I think, a community, and I wouldn't dismiss it out of hand for having positive benefits. How do you see that, Doug?
Absolutely, and I think that, excuse me, the point about, you know, the Wegmans on a Sunday morning and, you know, everybody's go Bills and that kind of thing. The other thing I think that makes the Bills community more special, say, than others, and more maybe important in terms of what it does for us in a positive way, is how much bad luck we've had. We are football's answers to maybe the Cubs and the Red Sox for all those years. We are the, you know, not that we've been losers. We've been very good for the last eight, and we were good in the 90s. But think of all the things that bind us and strengthen that community, all the ways we found to not get there, to not win the Super Bowl, whether it's Wide Right or the Music City Miracle or 13 Seconds, all those things, which when, as you have told us, the Bills win the Super Bowl in February, will make it all that much sweeter and bring us all that much closer together.
I agree with that absolutely. The pain that you endure in that fandom will lead to it being even sweeter.
Say you're a Browns fan.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
Are you kidding? You've got 13 seconds. You've got Music City Miracle. We've got the drive, the fumble, the shot. We've got all kinds of names for things. Not even lately, though. We don't get far enough to have names for things. It's just, you know, it's the trade for Deshaun Watson. It's the thing that drove me away from Cleveland sports fandom and into the arms of the Buffalo Bills.
That's why so many people who aren't Bills fans, and it's the same with the Browns and the Detroit Lions, who are so good this year, like these teams, because there is a respect among other fan bases for the things that not only the teams but those communities have had to endure over the years, and the fact that the teams and their fan bases just, for better or worse, just keep showing up.
Right. Think about this. If the Lions are a great example, Chuck, of a team that's been a loser for decades.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Life, they've been losers. And that brings them together. But it's not unlike other things we do where we feel a sense of community. You're a fan of pick a band, right, or pick an artist. And you go to the concerts, and there's an esprit de corps there. There's a feeling of, hey, these people are my people because we all love this band or we love this artist or whatever it is. I think it's the same thing with sports. It's just it's intensified because it's you know, in that one short season, and it's those intense 3 hours and all that stuff. You might go to a concert once, you know, the same person every 5 or 10 years, but you know, you're doing it every year, year in and year out. And you're with your, you know, your people, even if those people may be completely different from you as soon as they're not, you know, watching the game.
Mona?
Yeah, no, I was just thinking of how I got, when I was also first getting more into it, it was because of Brother Bill and his videos every week. And also, yeah, just a lot of that. I will say that football seems to be, although there's a bunch of it, it's a more manageable amount. Baseball, when I was surprised how often they were playing. So many games.
So many. So, like, 162
I could be a casual football fan, too.
10 times the games for baseball. I'm going to get you season tickets to the Red Wings. They don't play 162. That's a lot of commitment, though. That's a lot.
Like, we're right across the street. I love walking over, and I love all the silly things that go with minor league sports, though. Yeah. Like, you know, like the hamburger race and the, like, goofy stuff. All the arts of it.
Let me close with this, guys, and I appreciate it. And once again, if you're just joining us, I've seen the future. The Bills are winning the Super Bowl this year. I'm putting it out there. But Juan, who had emailed earlier, follows up to make one point. He says, I agree with some of the arguments your guests have been making for funding the stadium. We always seem to forget that the loyalty is very one-sided. Mm-hmm. The team or teams will gladly pack up and leave at any given moment if they get a better deal elsewhere. Orchestra, other arts, they're more tied to the city than our sports teams. Mona, what do you think about that?
I think there is something to that. And of course, I think, I don't know, I make a yes and argument, is that you can have all these things, but of course I will always advocate that you can, with a small percentage of the amount of money that you're spending on this, make a difference for so much in terms of, remember to value, I guess, you know, sports stars are pretty amazing and are doing amazing work, but we should value all these other roles in the community too. And I think people do, but there's certainly a point where perhaps, like, actions towards, like, love of sports ends up being more than sometimes when it comes to what are they doing? What is this artist doing? What is this community leader doing? We should support it more too.
30 seconds, Chuck Wade. Final thoughts from you here.
Yeah, I think what's so special about this is, you know, I have these memories with my dad, and now we're sharing them with our kids. And it's an opportunity for us to have easy friendships with others too, and easy belonging in a community. It's hard to make friends. It's hard to find people you identify with. But for 3 or 4 hours on a Sunday, we can all identify with each other just because of the logo we're wearing on a shirt. And I think that's pretty cool. And I would love to see a Super Bowl in Buffalo. I will be there for the parade.
It's going
to
happen. I got a Cleveland Browns onesie for my son when he was born, and then Child Protective Services called. They said, you can't raise Browns fans. Doug, final thoughts from you.
I share Mona's thoughts that it would be a nightmare scenario if my community was to lose the Red Wings or the Bills or the RPO or the Eastman School or GIVA or RBTL. I think they all add quality to our life and should be celebrated in spite of the possibility that the Bills could pack up and leave. They've been here since 62. They've proven they want to stay at least for a while.
Juan Soto signs for $765 million to play for the New York Mets. $765 million. Baseball has an economic disparity. It is impressive for the Bills or the Browns or the Lions to go this long without Super Bowls in football, where there's a lot more parity, which is what's going to make it even sweeter for Bills fans because they know what they've been waiting for. Hey, Doug, great talking to you, bud. Thanks for coming on the program.
Thanks, all. Appreciate it.
Doug Emblidge and Chuck Wade, Senior Vice President of Brighton Securities and former sports journalist. Always good, Chuck. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, my friend.
Go Bills, Mona.
Go Bills.
Go Bills. Evan Dawson Knox signing off, saying more connections coming up.